Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Ireland is fairly well represented at the top tables of the European Central Bank. The Central Bank of Ireland governor sits on the body which sets interest rates, while Philip Lane is the ECB chief economist. We also have Sharon Donnery, who doesn't set rates, but sits on the supervisory board of the ECB and guards the guards in monetary and banking policy terms. I caught up with Ms. Donnery and began by asking her whether she had a sense that interest rates would have to go up further and faster because of the war in Iran and the energy shock.
Morning, Joe, and to your listeners, thanks for having me on the show. As you said, obviously, I'm not on the governing council, so I won't be making decisions about interest rates. I suppose from our point of view here at the ECB, in terms of our work on banking supervision in relation to what's going on in the Middle East at the moment, we're mostly focused, I think, on the potential impact on the banks and making sure that the banks remain safe and sound. And of course, one of the things we've been checking over recent weeks is the direct exposures of the banks to the current conflict, which is not very significant. But of course, similarly for the debate about interest rates, I think the debate for the banks is also what this means for the economy more long term, what it ultimately means for interest rates and interest rate decisions, but also for economic growth. Because clearly, if there was a slowdown in economic growth, that has the potential to impact the business of the banks.
Yeah, you recently expressed skepticism about the ECB adopting a secondary mandate focused on competitiveness, stating that it might not suit the ECB's role as a supervisor rather than a regulator. Given the current economic situation and the geopolitical risks, do you see any scenario where the ECB might reconsider this stance?
So I think if you look at the risk landscape first at the moment, to say a word or two about that, I think we've been saying here at the ECB for a number of years that the current environment that we're living in is extremely uncertain. There are very significant shifts happening in the world in relation to geopolitics, digitization of the economy, for example, the risks around climate. And our view, I think, is that the banks need to be well prepared for this and that therefore our focus should remain firmly on the resilience of the banking sector. You know, a big lesson that we learned, I think, after the financial crisis. In relation to our mandate, I think in general terms at the moment, the mandate of the ECB is extremely clear. We're very focused on price stability, obviously, in terms of the role of the governing council and the work that we do there. And of course, financial stability, where banking supervision is one of the key parts of our work. And I think, as I said, the main thing to focus on there is in relation to resilience. As I'm speaking to Irish audience, I mean, I think people at home will remember the very significant difficulties in Ireland around the time of the financial crisis. And of course, the Central Bank of Ireland at that time had a mandate to promote the financial services sector, which was very heavily criticised in Patrick Honohan's report on the Irish financial crisis. So I think in general for central banks and supervisors, it's very important that they remain focused on their core and important roles about stability, price stability and financial stability, let's say.
Now, at the moment, we have so many different regulatory bodies. We have ESMA, we have EIOPA, we have the European Banking Authority and 21 different national regulators, which is like a spaghetti soup of watchdogs and a headache for many banks and insurers. Do you like the idea of a single regulatory body for financial services, potentially in Frankfurt?
Well, I think there's already been, you know, significant changes in the regulatory and supervisory architecture in Europe after the financial crisis, including here where the ECB was given responsibility for banking supervision over 10 years ago. And I think that that has brought a lot of benefits to the banking sector in terms of rebuilding the banking sector after the financial crisis. We are doing a lot of work here at the ECB on what you might call undue complexity or unnecessary complexity in the framework that we have at European level. And I certainly think there are many things that we can work on. In fact, the ECB published a couple of reports just before Christmas focusing on different elements of these. I think a key thing in terms of the regulatory architecture that you described is, you know, the banks or insurers or whoever need to understand the roles and responsibilities of those organisations. And of course, we could do an awful lot more to have harmonisation of European regulation. So, for example, direct applicability of regulation in member states rather than directives which need to be transposed. We could have a lot more, cooperation and, let's say, simplification of some aspects of regulation and supervision that doesn't necessarily depend on institutional or architectural change.
You mentioned amendments to make things easier for companies, especially in the financial services sector. How do you balance the need for stricter climate risk supervision with the risk of stifling innovation or overburdening banks, especially smaller banks?
Yeah, so I think we have a sort of line that I've used previously in speeches and things when I've spoken publicly about this, about making sure that our supervision is as simple as possible, but not simpler. So the banking sector and what banks do, the business that banks do, has inherent complexity in it. And of course, a lot of risk. Banks in the end are about risk management. And the world that we live in at the moment is both risky and uncertain. So I think what we try to do is to make sure that our application of regulation in terms of how we supervise the banks is entirely appropriate, as you say, to make sure that we don't stifle innovation. I think we do have to say, it's same rules, same supervision. So we do hear sometimes about, innovative banks and the like. And I think it is important that the same standards that do apply to them. You mentioned proportionality, which is a very important part of what we do. I think it's already the case at European level that we have, nuanced or calibrated approaches to how we supervise the very big banks, which are directly supervised by the ECB, and the smaller banks, which are indirectly supervised by the ECB and are primarily supervised by their local national central bank or national supervisor. But as I said earlier, we published these two reports just before Christmas. One of them is very much about what you're talking about, which is, let's say, adapting our supervision, making our supervision more efficient, more effective, more risk-based for the future to make sure that we're well set up for the world ahead of us.
Stay with us, Sharon Donnery, and we will take a quick break.
Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
We are speaking to Sharon Donnery, who sits on the supervisory board of the European Central Bank. Continuing our conversation, I asked Ms. Donnery about whether the ECB encouraged cross-border banking mergers, given the resistance by some national governments to the idea that their banks might be controlled by foreign entities.
So, I think one of the ideas behind banking union, as we call it, which was a big response in Europe to the financial crisis, was this idea of having a more integrated banking sector that was supervised in a single way with a level playing field. So these are important principles, I think, behind our approach to supervision. In terms of the specifics of cross-border banking, I think what we want to see is that mergers, for example, on a cross-border basis, make good business sense. So if they enhance the business model of the bank that's doing the acquisition, that they make sense from a financial point of view, and then, of course, that they're very well executed. So, we don't obviously make the mergers ourselves. We do have to do regulatory and supervisory approval, of course. But what we're looking for, I suppose, is mergers that make sense. On your point about scale, going back to your questions about, competitiveness, I think a lot of the debate about European banks is about how they compare to their peers internationally. And definitely in that case, I think scale is something that's very important. So when we see banks that compete globally, the ability to have scale, I think, is an important aspect.
Another important piece of legislation that the European Commission, at least, is trying to push is the Savings and Investment Union, to encourage Europeans to save a little bit less and risk a little bit more. And that includes buying into the capital markets and maybe investing in startups here in Europe. What role would the ECB play in that?
Yeah, so I think in general terms, the ECB is obviously supportive of the Savings and Investments Union. I think it's always important that we respect individual customers and their own decisions. People have to make decisions about whether they want to save their money or invest their money, and they need to be supported in making those decisions. I think the idea here for us is that there's a lot of debate about where do innovative companies and startups, for example, get their financing. And in many cases, rather than do that here in Europe, they go to the US. So I think there are big benefits for Europe in terms of having a deeper single market and the role of innovation in the European economy that could be helped by the Savings and Investments Union, including, for example, people investing in those companies. If they do that, though, they have to understand that, you know, that may come with some risk. And for us here at the ECB, I think the main focus is on the benefits of the Savings and Investments Union for Europe, for our monetary union, for the functioning of the single market. And of course, banks would or could have a role to play in the Savings and Investments Union in terms of some of those products that you mentioned. So from a supervision point of view, our focus would be on that aspect.
And one thing that the president of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, is pushing is the digital euro, which would bypass the likes of Visa and MasterCard. Why is that important? And when will it roll out? And what might delay it?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is that, you know, the European Central Bank, and I think our colleagues in the national central banks, remain very committed to cash. And I know there's been an active debate about that in Ireland. So the digital euro is, let's say, the digital equivalent of cash. It's designed to be complementary to cash and banknotes. It's not that we would replace cash or banknotes. And the idea is that you would have direct access to a digital version of the euro in the same way that you have access to cash. I think at the ECB, we see it as being, again, very important to Europe, European integration, the benefits of the single market, and also the idea that we would have our own payment system here in Europe that's run and controlled here in Europe. Importantly, the digital euro will have to go through a legislative process, including there's discussions at the European Parliament at the moment. It may actually fall to our colleagues in Ireland to finally negotiate the file as part of the Irish presidency of the European Union, which is coming up, as you know, later this year. So the ECB is making a lot of technical preparations, but until we get a legal mandate, which may come, I think, later this year or maybe next year, obviously we can't formally go ahead. But we are very focused on the preparatory work. And I would just emphasise again, because I know cash is important to many people and they use cash a lot, it's entirely complementary to cash and designed more, I would say, to support the digital economy.
Now, Gabrielle McClough was confirmed for another 7-year term as the governor of the Central Bank of Ireland. Does that mean that you won't get to be the first female central bank governor until 2033?
Well, it's nice of you to ask, Joe. But as you know, you're talking to me here in Frankfurt, my office here, and I'm very focused on my work here at the European Central Bank. I've only been here for just over a year. And I think if you listen to all of the topics that we've discussed, you can see that there's plenty to keep me busy here in Frankfurt. In terms of central banks, though, and their governors, we don't have any role in the appointment of governors in the local national central banks. But maybe I would just say one thing, which I think is a big part of the debate about central banks at the moment, which is the importance of central bank independence. So whether I'm there or not, I think in general, it's very important that we consider, you know, the people that are appointed to senior positions in central banks and to make sure that in this uncertain world that we protect central bank independence, which I think is very fundamental to central banks being able to do their job to protect both price and financial stability.
And that was Sharon Donnery being very diplomatic in her answer. And she sits, of course, on the supervisory board of the European Central Bank.
Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.